Professional athletes are almost always required by their league or association to talk with the media after a game or match. Sometimes they refuse. Most often it's reported they're being uncooperative or don't want to share their thoughts with reporters. So when professional tennis star Naomi Osaka wouldn't meet with the media after a match at the French Open last month and then withdrew from the tournament, some called her a prima donna. However, the narrative and opinions changed after Osaka said she suffered from depression and anxiety, and facing the media was difficult for her. At a time when stigma still exists around mental illness, Osaka coming forward was hailed as brave, but also put a spotlight on athletes and mental health. We're joined today by Dr. Amy S. Walker, licensed psychologist who has often worked with athletes. Dr. Walker, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to continue this critical discussion on mental health. And while we're highlighting mental health and athletes, I just want to say that this conversation also extends to the general community.
And I wanted to make that point as well. Even though Naomi Osaka is kind of the beginning of this discussion, the general population can, much of what we discussed today will apply to the general population. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Your first thoughts when you heard that Naomi Osaka withdrew from the French Open and cited her mental health?
Mm-hmm. I believe that what we witnessed was one of the ultimate demonstrations of a firm understanding and practice of self-advocacy, self-worth, boundary setting, and self-efficacy and locus of control, which are two psychological constructs that are particularly important when we're talking about athletes.
When you say we witnessed something that what you're describing is something that was very, very significant. Was it so significant because of the size of the stage?
Absolutely. When we think about athletes, when they go through mental health challenges or difficulties, many times those who are high profile and elite athletes do not do this alone, and they don't do it in silence and in privacy. There is absolutely a stage for them to be on. And whether it is the stage of social media, whether it is the stage of a press conference, they have that platform. And so if it were someone else who decided that they could not show up to work, because essentially this is work for Naomi, if this person could not show up to work because of a mental health disorder or a mental health challenge, this would not have been big news. But because of the stage that Ms. Osaka is on, it absolutely made a huge difference.
You know, before we go any further, I wanted something you just said, a mental health disorder. I want to make sure that we are using the correct terminology here, because there's a large percentage of people that experience a mental health issue but aren't diagnosed as mentally ill. How do we refer to someone as having a mental health issue or an episode rather than someone who is living with a mental illness?
Well, I think you said, you described it clearly, that there are those who are diagnosed, which means that they've been seen by a professional, a helping professional, whether it is a psychiatrist or a counselor, an LPC, a psychologist, and they have a formal diagnosis. Or there are others who perhaps are going through mental health challenges but have not been diagnosed. Does that mean that they do not have a disorder? No, it just means that they just have not seen a professional and received a formal diagnosis.
You know, I get the sense that we as a society have a hard time even knowing how to refer to this. And I would also assume that that means that it comes back to stigma. I mean, why do we have such a hard time discussing this?
We can talk about the stigma that surrounds mental health, and it dates back so far back. But when we think about the idea that you're sharing your most intimate thoughts, your most intimate feelings, your most intimate challenges with someone, with a complete stranger, then that feels or could feel intrusive. And also, those who are sharing those thoughts may not feel as if their privacy is being protected. They may not feel that someone on the other side, i.e. the counselor, the psychologist, understands their purview, understands their perspective. And in some cultures, the idea that you share your business with others is just not acceptable. Whatever stays, whatever goes on in the house stays in the house. And so, or whatever goes on in the family stays in the family. So with that said, then there creates this stigma about what to share and who to share it with.
But, you know, the thing is, and I want to get back to talking about Naomi Osaka, but as you said, this is a discussion that transcends just sports and athletics, is that we as a society have the person who is admitting, or, and I hate to say admitting because it makes it sound like they're confessing to something, but coming out and talking publicly about having a mental health issue or a mental health challenge, that they don't want to be judged. They're afraid of being judged. But then on the other side, why do so many people in society judge someone that they deem to have a mental health issue?
Well, that judgment can come from perhaps people having the idea that if someone is dealing with a mental health disorder or a mental health challenge, that then that person is weak. They do not have the strength to withstand day-to-day psychological stress, psychological trauma. And that is really, really something that we have to pay attention to, because when you think about trauma, that is not something that's day to day. This is something that's really, really significant. When we think about some of the stressors that others go through, this is not just about, you know, being stranded on the side of the road. And so that's a stressor, an everyday stressor that could happen. We're talking about something that is significant. And with going back to Naomi, she was very clear that she deals with depression and social anxiety. And if we can just stay on social anxiety for a minute, we're talking about having the inability to sit in front of others. When you think about a press conference, the table is already setting a boundary. And on the other side of that table are cameras, there's press, there are questions, there are microphones. And so someone dealing with social anxiety could really, really have a hard time even just sitting there. And so for her to be able to proclaim that this is something that she has a challenge with, I believe that those who are the doers of these things, whether it be the media or the French Open committee who mandates that because this is part of your job, you must sit in front of press, you must attend the press conference, that they would have a better understanding and that, no, this does not show weakness. As a matter of fact, when we talk about athletes, we talk about this concept of mental toughness. And some people could look at it and say, well, she wasn't able to sit at that table. Does that really describe mental toughness? And my response to that is she displayed the ultimate description of mental toughness. So when we talk about mental toughness, we're talking about this collection of personal resources. And these personal resources can be locus of control. These personal resources can be self-efficacy and optimism. And using those personal resources to be able to help face situational demands. In that moment, Naomi was able to say, because I have strong self-efficacy and because I understand that I have an internal locus of control, which means that I will determine my successes and my failures, I am making the decision to not attend press conferences. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to make the decision to preserve my mental health and withdraw from the tournament altogether.
You know, I was talking in the introduction about how when Naomi Osaka explained the reason that she didn't want to appear at the press conference and that she withdrew from the tournament, that she was lauded. There were a lot of people saying that this was very brave. It was courageous on her part. Billie Jean King, who was gay, you know, was one of the people who, you know, now Billie Jean King has experienced a lot and has had to be mentally tough throughout her career, throughout her life. But she gave some credit to Naomi, but at the same time, she said she has a responsibility to promote her sport. So in a way, it was kind of like a backhanded compliment, if you will. I mean, is that part of the deal, that if this is the level you're on, that there are some responsibilities you have to take that maybe you won't like?
I believe that, sure, that the contractually she is mandated to attend the press conferences. That is a part of her job as an athlete, as a professional athlete. And I believe that so many times that has been described in the news. Well, this is a part of her job. She should be sitting at that table. She should be giving these interviews. However, if there's someone saying that due to mental health concerns, I am unable to perform my duties, then I think that we have to really take that into consideration. We can't just say, yes, we understand, but we need you to promote the sport. There are others to promote the sport. This is a time where Naomi says that I am unable. And it's not that she just didn't show up. I believe sometimes the narrative is that she said that she's not going. It's not about that she is just not showing up. She is dealing with challenges right now that will not allow her to show up in the capacity, in her full capacity. And I think it's great that she says, no, when I show up, I want to be able to show up 100%. And right now, I can't be at 100%. And I think that's fair. That's fair to the press. That's fair to the fans. And that's fair to the tournament. Because if you want an athlete to be present, you want them to be fully present. And right now, she was very clear that she's not able to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was so much made, especially before she explained the reasons that she didn't want to attend the press conference. So much made that she was the highest paid athlete, or female athlete, woman athlete in the world last year. Like somehow, because she has been very successful and has done well financially, that she should overcome her mental health challenges. I mean, and again, this is almost a societal thing that you make a lot of money, there are some things you have to do.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to this idea about mental toughness and those who are not in the field or who may not have a firm understanding of mental toughness versus mental health may believe that these terms are synonymous, and they are not. So again, the ability to have a strong level of mental toughness it's an individualistic characteristic, and it's a collection of these personal resources. And when we talk about mental health, we're looking at this state of well-being in which the individual realizes his or her own abilities. And this is our definition by the World Health Organization. And because of their own abilities, they can cope with the normal stresses of life, and they can work productively and fruitfully, and is able to make a contribution to his or her community. Able to make a contribution to his or her community. Now, while Naomi was able to go out on the court and hit the tennis ball and make that contribution to the tennis world, there was another aspect that she was not able to contribute to. And at this time, respectfully, I believe that the tournament officials should have respected that was something that did not call for a $15,000 fine because she was unable to attend the press conference. And if you were able to follow up on the aftermath of that $15,000 fine, what we found was that Calm, C-A-L-M, which is a meditation app, they decided that because Naomi was given this $15,000 fine, that they would not only pay her fine, the $15,000 fine, they would also match it to an organization that promotes sport through mental health, or promotes mental health through sport. And subsequently, they also stated that for any of the other tennis players who were unable to attend the press conferences due to mental health concerns, that they would also subsidize their $15,000 fine. That speaks volumes to the understanding of the significance of her actions.
You know, what you were describing earlier, when you were talking about Naomi not being able to appear at the press conference and give her best because she couldn't do it at the time, if you replace the word mental health with physical health, it would be the same thing. But yet we don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You bring up a great point. It's an excellent point, because health includes mental and physical health. Many times when we hear health, automatically our minds will go to physical health. But just as important as our physical health is to us, mental health is on the same playing field. As a matter of fact, my belief as a psychologist is, if your mental health is not intact, then your physical health will follow suit and it will also decline. So it's really, really important that both mental health and physical health are taken into account when we talk about the word health overall.
We started our conversation by talking about tennis champion Naomi Osaka withdrawing from the French Open tournament because she didn't want to appear at a press conference, saying she suffered from anxiety and depression. There's been a lot of talk about mental health, especially as it relates to athletes since then. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. A couple questions from listeners, Dr. Walker. Jeffrey asks, as an employee, isn't Naomi Osaka protected by the American with Disabilities Act and thus be given a reasonable accommodation? Now, one thing that we should point out is this was the French Open in Paris. But do American with Disabilities Act rules and regulations apply to even professional athletes?
So in that sense, what we want to do is there is a process by which someone is given that designee as a person with a disability. And so there is paperwork that has to be filled out. That paperwork has to be processed through the authorities that be. And so we want to be careful about saying, okay, because she has this disorder, she's automatically covered under ADA. There is a potential that she could be covered under ADA. However, we also have to take a look at these other professional organizations and what their regulations and what their guidelines say in terms of mental health and being able to have that designation as a person with a disability.
Lisa asks, a problem in our society is making assumptions on mental health. Is that a gateway for bullying? Did people actually know the tennis player had a mental health issue before jumping to conclusions about her? How can society improve?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that others knew that she dealt with a mental health disorder. I think that actually probably more people were a bit surprised about it. But at the same time, in terms of bullying, when you understand that someone is going through something, hopefully we would think that we as humans would have some compassion for that. But we also know that that's not true. We can look at it in adolescent populations. If someone is diagnosed as someone with autism spectrum disorder, then their adolescent peers could also bully them. I think in the case of adults, it's very, very important that we don't look at these situations as situations to be able to attack people, or situations where we want to downplay or make it a negative situation. What we want to do is be able to say, wow, she was brave. That was a great indicator of being able to highlight self-care at its highest peak. And so if we are able to change that narrative about others speaking out about going to see a therapist because of depression, because of anxiety, due to trauma, then we can start chipping that wall down of stigma as it relates to mental health.
It when telling the Naomi Osaka story as it relates to her mental health, there was an episode where she was booed after beating Serena Williams in a tournament. Serena Williams, very popular, maybe the most popular woman athlete in the world, maybe the most popular athlete in the world. Athletes get used to reactions from fans, and there are some that even thrive on some of those negative reactions they get from fans. But Naomi's experience shows that it can hurt. They're human beings too.
Absolutely. When we talk about athletes and mental health, what the research finds is that athletes experience mental health challenges at the same rate as the general population. It goes back to our first discussion of this conversation is about athletes, but it can extend to the general population. Just as much as the non-athlete experiences depression, the athlete experiences it at the same rate and perhaps even at a higher intensity. Because as we said initially, Naomi talked about her anxiety and depression. However, she was not able to do it in a silo. She was not able to do it very silently and in private as a non-athlete would. Hers was set upon a stage where she told millions of people about what she was struggling with. And so I think it's very, very important that we understand athletes have the same emotional, cognitive processes and challenges as the non-athlete.
You know, I've seen parents at or fans too at Little League games yell things at 8 or 9 year old kids that are personal and yell at them like they're pro athletes. I mean, and these are kids that you know, they don't know what's going on. They're not paid to do this. They're not on that big stage, and probably very difficult for them to process. How did we get to this point where if you're playing a sport that somehow you're fair game for anyone in the stands to say whatever they want?
When we think of athletes, many times, especially if you're an elite athlete, if you're a very well-known athlete, the fact that you are well-known and you're so good at what you do, they believe that your physical prowess will equate to your mental stability, will equate to your mental strength. And we have to be very, very careful about the assumptions, as the previous caller mentioned. This is really, really important that we do not equate the two automatically just because someone is really good at hitting that tennis ball and their speed is tremendous, or someone is really good at blocking and hits really, really hard. That does not mean, or it does not equate, that their mental stability is at the very, very same level. And so when we talk about these children, as you said, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, where parents are yelling out things that could be detrimental to their psychological development, we have to be very, very careful about that. As a matter of fact, during my dissertation studies, over 10 years ago, I presented and created this sport model of support for high school student athletes. And I believe that this could actually extend to all student athletes. And it's called the Pentasport model. And it's called this Pentasport model because it has 5 different sectors of individuals that are really, really important to the mental well-being of an athlete. That's the athlete, him or her, or themselves. Coaches, parents, and guardians, helping professionals, as well as mentors. And so when you look at this Pentasport model, all of these different sectors of people are very, very important to the development. And so we have to be able to ask ourselves, especially with the younger children, how are we contributing positively to his or her development? It's very, very important. How are we contributing positively to his, her, or their development? It's so very important. And words matter. Many times people believe that, yes, if I tell you that you can't do something, then maybe you'll go out and you'll try a little bit harder. Not with everyone. Everyone is different. Individually, people will deal with things in their own manner. And I believe that Venus Williams made that comment about Naomi Osaka. And she said, listen, I'm able to sit at this table and do what I do because I know that none of you on the other side, i.e. the press, are able to match my prowess when it comes to the tennis court. And Naomi Osaka has to deal with her concerns about being able to sit in front of press very differently. And I think that individualized piece is really, really important to keep in mind.
If you're just tuning in, our guest is Dr. Amy S. Walker, licensed psychologist who has often worked with athletes. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. And I hate to use the word or the term used to, but it seems as though we used to play games to have fun. Now it sometimes feels like there's so much pressure on kids to perform from parents and coaches, or to win, even at the lowest level. How does that lead to anxiety or depression and not having fun when it almost becomes a job? What does that do to a young person?
Well, I think it depends on who that young person is. Again, everyone is different in how they handle things, how they handle mental stress, how they handle anxiety, how they handle some symptoms of depression. And so there are going to be some individuals who you can be very tough on them and they work great under pressure. And so that pressure is helpful to them. There are others who that pressure is going to be to their detriment. That pressure is not going to develop them as much as the coach or the parent thinks that they're going to be developed. And so it's important to know the individual. It's important to know whether it's an adolescent, whether it's an adult, understand what's going on. And so when we talk about destigmatizing mental health, especially with athletes, what's important is that we're creating a sense of awareness, a higher sense of awareness about what are the signs, what are the symptoms of mental health challenges. And that means not only training the coaches, but training other staff that are working with the athletes, whether it is the physical training staff, the medical staff, making sure that parents are aware. There has to be some parent training about how to identify mental health symptoms in your child, especially if he or she is an athlete. And then when we talk about contact sports, this is really, really important because we know that concussion rates with adolescents are also important to keep in mind and are certainly a prevalent thing. And so we have to be mindful that there may be an injury that's leading to a mental health challenge. And so we have to keep those things at the forefront. And again, being able to train parents, being able to train coaches, being able to train other staff about what are the signs and the symptoms so that we can detect it early. And we don't want to be able to catch it on the back end because by then it could be too late or that the damage has already been that significant that the recovery will take longer.
There's a cliche in baseball, but this can apply to almost any sport and really almost any job out there or anything you're doing. And that cliche is that the game is 90% mental, meaning confidence, that if you don't have confidence in yourself, it's going to be difficult to succeed. As I said, this could apply on the playing field. It could apply at your job. It could apply at a lot of things. If you are someone who is depressed, someone who suffers from anxiety, it would seem difficult to have that confidence and to perform at your best. This kind of goes back to what Naomi was saying about not going to the press conference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Here's the piece. If you are someone who is an athlete, but also dealing with some of these symptoms around depression or anxiety or even trauma. We have to remember depression, anxiety aren't the only two mental health challenges that athletes may deal with. They deal with the similar things that others are dealing with, including whether it's disordered eating or eating disorders or even adjustment disorders. For example, if you have a college graduate who was promoted or was drafted into the professional leagues, now there's going to be a transition for them. And so we have to be mindful of what might that transition look like? What are the challenges that may come with that transition? And so keeping those things in mind, we have to be able to say, who are the helping professionals that we are putting in place in order to assist this new person coming into the professional leagues, or who are the helping professionals that are working at the colleges and the universities that can assist those who are either just entering sport from high school or have gone through, let's say, an injury that they were off for a full season. And so now they're returning. All of these things play into how an athlete will adjust, how an athlete will deal with some of the signs and the symptoms of some mental health disorders. But I believe that if they have the right people in place, if they are getting the proper treatment. And so that's a discussion that we can have at a totally different time, because the treatment alone is something that has to be looked further into. As I was looking at the research with mental health and athletes, much of the research that is being conducted internationally. So in Sweden, in the Netherlands, in Denmark, there is so much research going on that is taking a closer look and a more analytical look into the mental health needs of athletes. But here in America, we need to extend that research even further.
Dr. Amy S. Walker, licensed psychologist who has often worked with athletes, so much more to talk about. Dr. Walker, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Scott.